8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Knotfest.com presents Talk to Me. With over 300 interviews under his belt and 6 years running, your host Joshua Toomey interviews metal and rock's heaviest hitters. Follow the show at Talk to Me Talk. Here's your host, Joshua Toomey.
What is up, everybody? Welcome into Talk to Me here on Knotfest.com. As always, I am Joshua Toomey, joined by the one and only Chris Aiken. Chris, how are we doing?
We are awesome, man. How's it going?
It is good, man. We have not sold out to the Saudis just yet.
But we're on the market if the Saudis want to throw us money.
Yeah, if they want to back a truck up like they are for the WWE, you know, just we'll conform to a few religious laws, right?
Yeah, look, I'll give them a fair deal, 1/6 of what they're paying the WWE, and they can own the show. Just 1/6. That would be fine.
Yeah. And we will dive into that right off the top here, because we were actually talking about that off mic a second ago. But, you know, it's crazy how much that WWE brand is worth. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, like I said, I was listening to like a financial podcast and they were saying $8 to $10 billion. And you said They're selling for around $6 billion. Still, man, that's a crazy amount of money. I would never think that, but amount of money.
You got to think of the whole piece, and the whole piece is not the ragtag product that you're seeing on TV right now. You know, it's not Roman Reigns and Sami Zayn, right. And you know, it's how many hundreds of thousands of hours of video and all these pay-per-view videos and all these other companies that Vince has bought over the years, WCW, ECW. Yeah. And then there's even, I mean, I the reason I signed up for Peacock was to keep the WWE network.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's what is that value worth to NBC? I'm sure I'm not the only person that bought Peacock solely for the WWE network. I'm sure there's a million other people like me. So there's value into that. And obviously the USA network, which I think is also owned by NBC, if I'm not mistaken. You know, they carry Raw and Fox carries SmackDown, and they've all paid billions of dollars to carry, or millions of dollars rather, to carry these shows. There's a lot, and that's before you even get into merchandise and, you know, legends and all that other stuff. I mean, I can see $8 billion, especially in the world that we're in now where everybody is screaming for content.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you're a digital provider and you're looking to get into the sports world, I mean, what did Amazon pay for Thursday Night Football, the world's shittiest game every week? and they paid like $4 billion or something, $4 billion a year, right? Or was it $4 billion total? It was some crazy number, but it was billions. It was billions with a B, and that's just to come in for a bad football game that 9/10 of even the most hardcore football fans do not watch, just to get their foot in the door.
Yeah, and that Thursday Night Football game is just on Amazon Prime. So if you don't have that, you can't watch it. I remember seeing a Packers fan after the Titans and Packers played on Thursday night. I saw him at the grocery store, and he kind of did like I was wearing my Titans hoodie, and he goes, "Oh man, congrats on the win. I wasn't able to watch it because we don't have Prime." And I was like, wow, like a giant Packers fan, obviously not in the market, wasn't able to watch the game because they doesn't have, you know, Amazon Prime, which I feel like most people have that now, but I guess
a lot of people do have it, but probably not as many as you think. I mean, just because we live and die on Amazon doesn't mean everybody does, but you know, but just thinking about that, just do the math right now. So Amazon is taken care of for a live sporting thing. Hulu doesn't really have a live sporting thing that's their own. I mean, they license out to other people. Neither does, HBO does some boxing and some MMA, but they don't really have one yet. Not like a major legitimate drawing thing. I mean, when you start thinking about it, you start seeing Netflix. Netflix doesn't have a live sports thing yet. They're looking to get into live as well.
Well, yeah, YouTube TV got the NFL Sunday ticket. So that's,
yeah.
I mean, and basically all that's going to make me do is sign up for YouTube TV and drop my Spectrum streaming or whatever that I have and just go over to that. I mean, that's the one thing listening to business podcasts, things like that. A lot of these services lose money on the NFL, they know how much cachet that brings to the brand, you know, you remember Fox started out and it was, you know, The Simpsons and Married with Children and Living Color. It was far down the dial on most TVs.
Sure.
And it was, you know, it wasn't there, you know. Back in the day, there was the big three, and Fox was just an upstart, you know, CW type thing. And then they threw tons of money at the NFL and got John Madden and all that stuff. And you see what it did, basically turned around an entire company. So I think a lot of these streaming services like Amazon and YouTube and I thought Netflix and all those things were going to get in on the Sunday ticket because it's just a huge thing for their brand.
Sure. Well, and I mean, that's where a company like the WWE can sell. That's why that's why it's valued so high, you know, is because there it's known now. It's known that if you get the right product, I mean, just I'll just use Netflix as an example. I think everybody understands that Netflix is kind of dying right now. Mm-hmm. You know, because everybody's spread out now, you know, all the, like NBC took all their content back to Peacock.
Yeah.
And so Netflix Netflix doesn't have The Office anymore and Hulu doesn't have The Office anymore or any of the NBC shows, leaves a giant hole. And if Netflix doesn't adapt, they're going to die. You know, I mean, there's only so long that they can get over by offering you as a new movie, Uncle Buck, you know,
hey, that's a good movie.
It is a good movie, but I mean, but it also came out in 1980, whatever. And it ain't going to hold weight for that much longer. So they got to have something that's going to draw people in, and they try different things. They tried with the Harry and Meghan podcast show or something. And they have not found their right live or current weekly niche other than the very occasional. And when you think about it, they've only had one in the last like 4 or 5 years show. Yeah. You know, I mean, for a while, Netflix was great because Netflix always had that next up and coming show like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black and, you know, stuff like that, that caught on. It's been a while since they've had that. The only one they have is Stranger Things right now.
Yeah. And you gotta, those services, I mean, you really just need like one thing a month that everybody wants and needs to watch. And that's, you know, the Netflix thing with like the comedy specials with Bill Burr specials. And there's a Nate Bargatze special coming out this month. I'm pumped to see.
Yeah.
And you know, if they could just string along like just enough stuff to keep everybody kind of coming back. Mm-hmm. I know Melissa's watching a few things on there right now. But yeah, I mean, that's all these services need is, you know, a Disney Plus needs a new Star Wars thing or, you know, cartoons and whatnot. I mean, like the Disney catalog, no telling what that's worth. You know, I mean, they sold the Star Wars just franchise for $4
billion. Yeah.
And that was a few years ago. So, I mean, there's no telling what it's worth now, especially with all of the new stuff with the Boba Fett shows and the Mandalorians and all that stuff, too.
Sure. And I mean, think about that. That was $4 billion for what at the time, six movies and a small can and a books and stuff, not
right.
A lot of merchandise, but basically six movies, you know, a cartoon.
And just a lot of IP.
A lot of junk. And that sold for $4 billion.
Yeah.
What do you think 100,000 hours of video that has been in the public eye for 40 years is worth?
Yeah.
Like WWE.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the one thing, even though I'm not the biggest WWE fan. I mean, when I go to Peacock, occasionally I'll head over to the WWE stuff, check out and throw on a, you know, Ultimate Warrior's Greatest Hits or watch, you know, just a random match from 1987 and, you know, stuff like that. It's nice to have on there. And I thought that was a huge deal when they kind of took the WWE network from being like, what was it, like $19.99 a month?
No, it was nine bucks.
Okay. Yeah. Well, they took it from $9 a month and then they just put it on Peacock, I think that was a win-win for both things, man.
It definitely was, but it just as a value standpoint, think about, you don't watch WWE like weekly, right?
Right.
But you could pick Roman Reigns out.
Yeah.
And you don't watch the product.
Right. You know, and that was nice too with it being on Peacock, like WrestleMania or SummerSlam, SummerSlam that was at the Titan Stadium. I was like, oh, I'll check that out because it's on, and it was free. It's just on there, you know, like growing up as a kid, you know, pay-per-views were $50 or whatever they were. And so, I mean, me being a poor kid, you know, I had to wait for the VHS to come out to rent it at the movie store or watch Monday Night, whatever it was. I don't think it was Raw.
Main Event.
Yeah.
Friday Night Main Event or whatever.
Yeah, all that stuff to kind of see what happened during WrestleMania to find out the big, or you had to wait for the WWE magazine or something, exactly. You know, like whatever you had to do to find out the, you know, the results. But, you know, they made a big stink about it, and Pat McAfee was on, you know, in the matches and things like that. So I was like, you know, I'll check it out. I'll head over. And, you know, since I already subscribed to Peacock, I might as well take advantage.
Use it for nothing. Exactly. You know? But and believe me, you're hitting on my biggest pet peeve now. You know, now I'm much more of an AEW guy, the All Elite Wrestling, the one owned by the Jags owner, Tony Khan. And I love it. I definitely love it. And the WWE's product has been so bad for so long that it's nice to have something else to watch.
Yeah.
But that being said, every 3 months I throw another $50 at AEW for a pay-per-view. Every single time it bugs the shit out of me that I can go and watch the bigger by far company's pay-per-view as part of my same thing that gives me The Office and, Law and Order SVU or whatever, you know, the Chicago Med or whatever, or I can pay $50. I can pay literally 5 months worth of Peacock for the privilege of a three-hour pay-per-view. It drives me crazy because it just doesn't seem like it's a value oriented thing. But, you know, again, it goes into that valuation. How much is that worth? Yeah, and I'm sure they address all this, and when they're trying to figure out the value is, you know, how much is it, how much money would they be making if they were still on the old model versus do they make by having people like me that sign up and forget about it and just pay, you know, I pay Peacock by the year. I don't even do monthly. I'm just like, all right, just give me it for a year, whatever. I don't care.
The content game is crazy because of. Like the hard times, the parody hardcore site. I'm sure you see the posts all the time. You know, they're funny or whatnot, but they sold that for $1 million. Like two average Joes, comedians, writers, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like they made this site. They didn't think anything about it. They just wanted to make jokes. Next thing you know, they sold it for $1 million, but even at $1 million, I was like, man, that seems low.
Yeah.
For something like that, because it's so, even in such a small niche, it's, you know, it's pretty well known and things like that. You know, it's kind of the Onion of hardcore.
Yeah. We're in a different world now. In the old days, the only people that could make these deals were the big players.
Yeah.
Now it's like, you know, me and you, if anybody ever watches this fucking podcast, we could sell it.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, if all of a sudden we caught fire somehow, some way, some Uber Pantera fan with $2 billion in the bank wanted this podcast.
Yeah.
They could just be like there and snatch it up. And, you know, and that's
they would have to buy us out from Knotfest, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, I'm sure from Knotfest that would cost what, 2 Slipknot masks. And, right. You know, and a thanks for having us.
but yeah, I mean, that's true. Like the, I listen. Do you know that guy they call Mattress Mac? He's the guy at like the Kentucky Derby that bets like $10 million on a horse. And
during
the World Series, he had like a $75 million bet on the Astros and like all this other shit. And you know, he's just a big sports fan, and he's also worth $1 billion. So, like he took all the, he's in Houston. So he took all the big Houston sports writers, and I don't even know if he's making any money off of it, but he's just throwing money at them to write about Houston sports and, you know, but like a passion project thing. It's like not even worth the money. So yeah, I mean, we do need to find that Pantera fan out there that's like, that wants to get into, you know, interviewing bands or whatnot. If when our third mic shows up, everybody's gonna be like, what's up with this guy? I'm like, don't worry about it. Yeah, just go with
it. Don't worry about it.
Just go with it.
Me and you'll be wearing big chains that say Pantera and all diamonds.
Yeah, I'll get my CFH you know, medallion on.
Get the CFH clock as big as like Flavor Flav's back in the day.
Nice. Well, man, let's dive into some music stuff.
Okay.
I wanted to say friend of the show, Mike De Leon, has been picked up by Soulfly now. He's now guitar player Soulfly. And
good for him.
I sent him a nice little message the other day, you know, just congratulating him. And he wrote back that he's like, I mean, he gets to go from Phil Anselmo to Max Cavalera. I mean, you know, like, what else do you need?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty good company there as a guitar player to go from that, from one to the other. And what good timing for that guy, man. I mean, obviously, Phil is going to be busy for a while.
Yeah.
Seems like it's turning into much more of a while than just this coming summer. So
right.
Good for him, man. I mean, he's a great guitar player anyway. And I think that's what's kind of even seeing the announcement and everything, that's sort of been lost in the shuffle. It's like, oh, they got this guy from Anselmo, and then everybody starts talking about Pantera again. Yeah. And it's like they've forgotten how good this guy is of a guitar player. He's a really good player.
Oh yeah, he's a monster. And he's a good guy. I had him on Drag the Waters a long time ago.
Sure.
Kind of talking about, you know, doing the illegal stuff. Just super nice guy. So it's like, you know, a good win for the good guys, you know.
Yeah, and it's a win for Max too.
Oh yeah.
Cause let's be honest. I don't think either of us thought that he was going to do too well replacing Rizzo. That's a pretty good replacement for Rizzo.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Hopefully everything works out for old Mike and De Leon.
Yes. I hope so, man. I like that guy. I've met him a couple times. He's really nice.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, man, is, you know, we had Terry Glaze on here before the, you know, the reunion stuff kind of really popped off and the shows and stuff like that. Former Pantera singer Terry Glaze has called the band's current comeback a good thing, saying that it's a great way to celebrate the music of the Texas Metalers. Glaze, who fronted the band during their glam years into the early to mid 80s, made his comments while speaking to Eon Music in a brand new interview. Come on, dude. Terry, come on.
Yeah. Who has supported Terry Glaze more than this show?
Right.
I mean, between this show and, I'll be honest, he came on Classic Metal Show because of your hookup with Terry Glaze.
Yeah.
We've given him tons of support. The best we could get was Van Halen was a good band.
Yeah. Hey, all I gotta say is Van Halen was a good band.
Come on, bro. You give it to Eon Music? What the hell? No more support for Terry Glaze.
Yeah, Terry.
You're out of here until the next single.
You drop. And your evil freely.
Yeah. Get until the next single town. Drops. Then we'll be right back on.
Then he'll text me again. Hey, can I come on? I'm like, yes, you can.
Yep.
You were in a bed with Dimebag. You can come on anytime you want. Honestly, I think they kind of just, with the quote unquote good thing, like that, they are just like I'm sure he was probably protecting himself. And just slipped out a good thing, and that's the only thing that they could find in there.
Well, and maybe, and again, I don't remember the exact timing of it, but I think now that there's been shows, it might be easier for him to comment on something that's been pretty favorably reviewed.
Yeah.
You know, now versus before it had ever happened and anybody heard, you know, if every review was, this is garbage, this is terrible.
Right. Then he'd
probably still be saying Van Halen's a good band.
Right. Yeah. I need to get that clip. Van Halen's a good band. Kind of Pantera adjacent, but Jimmy Bauer discusses the Pantera / Exhorter comparisons. He said that those two bands were like night and day.
Well, he's wrong, but go ahead.
Speaking to Pod Scum, the Pod Scum podcast.
Oh, had to subscribe to that. Pod Scum?
Pod Scum.
All right.
It's if we click on it, it's probably like, you know, interviewing everybody awesome like the last time we tried that. So
exactly. We're not going to talk shit about anybody at this point.
Right. He said, as transcribed by Blabbermouth.net, it doesn't matter who came first or anything. Exhorter and Pantera were night and day, dude. Exhorter was a band that just did really well here in New Orleans. I'm speaking from when we were all younger and everybody in that band could play their ass off. Was Phil influenced by Exhorter and maybe took that to Pantera? Of course he was, Bauer acknowledged. But does that define who Pantera is? Fuck no. I've seen all that written, and that's actually an old thing from the 90s. People have been saying that. I never got it because if that's the case, then I Hate God is nothing more than second-rate Melvins. That's it.
Okay, he's right that it is second-rate Melvins, first of all. He's right? Absolutely correct there that I Hate God is second-rate Melvins. And if you listen to Slaughter in the Vatican, yep, and you listen to the faster tracks on Cowboys from Hell.
Oh yeah.
It's clearly one was influenced in the other. Now it's not clear who influenced who, because they both came out, I think, at the exact same time. I think they both are 1990s releases, if I'm not mistaken.
I think Slaughter in the Vatican might have even came out even after Cowboys from Hell, but like if you watch all that early Pantera stuff, there's Exhorter posters in the background. Phil's wearing an Exhorter shirt. You know, he definitely. And if you listen to that stuff, man, I definitely think that Exhorter snuck in there and definitely, you know.
Well, Phil saw. Look, it's like everything else, though, dude. Every band is influenced by everybody else.
Yeah,
you know, there's not a power metal band on this planet that was not influenced by Iron Maiden. Let's just call it. They may not be, you know, ripping off Iron Maiden. They may not do a song called 3 Minutes to Midnight, but they're influenced by them. Phil was in that Nola sound, and Nola has a very distinct sound, specifically in the guitar playing and the groove thing. I guarantee you at some point, somewhere, somehow, Philip shows up to some of the early rehearsals at Pantera with his demos from Exhorter, plays it, and you know this because you met Dimebag as well. Dimebag hears it, starts playing it himself.
Yeah.
And is like, I like this shit. That's good shit. Give me some drums, Vince. You know, and next thing you know, they're creating, you know, the Art of Shredding or something like that. You know, one of the early ones that was a crossover. I don't have any proof of that. I've never been told that, but
yeah,
that's how that happened. They didn't just all of a sudden go from sounding like Judas Priest to sounding like Pantera.
Like Exhorter.
Yeah, like Exhorter. Exactly.
Before, you know, YouTube and streaming and everything else, I had always heard that Pantera ripped off Exhorter, but I'd never heard Exhorter.
Okay.
And it wasn't until within the last 5-7 years when I first heard Exhorter, I put on Slaughter in the Vatican, and being a Pantera fan my whole life, I was just like, whoo, maybe they did. Cause I was always like, there's no way Pantera ripped off anybody. They're Pantera. And then you hear that Slaughter in the Vatican the first time and you're like, wow,
it really is. I mean, when you listen to it, and it's kind of, if you break it down, you really break it down, you can see the influence. And especially if you listen to what was the Pantera album before Cowboys?
Power Metal.
Yeah. If you listen to even Phil's presentation, let's break it down individually. Mm-hmm. If you listen to Phil's presentation on that and you listen to Cowboys, totally different vocalist.
Yeah.
Almost completely loses the wah. I mean, there's a couple of there's a couple of moments here and there that he throws it in there.
Yeah.
But for the very most part, that's gone. You know, and he goes to the exact style that Kyle Thomas was doing on Slaughter in the Vatican and in the earlier demos. That's what Phil heard. Phil heard it. Phil went to it. Same with Dimebag. Dimebag's playing style, just his style, was very different on those on the four pre-Cowboys albums. His style completely, totally changed. And if you listen to that, you can compare it to what was that guy's name? The guitar player from early Exhorter, Vinny something, Vinny.
Yeah.
Vinny Labello or something.
Or yeah. Vinny Labella.
Yeah. That guy. If you listen to what that guy was doing in the earliest days and you listen to what Dimebag brought to Cowboys from Hell, it didn't just happen.
Right.
And again, everybody rips off everybody. That is how music has always grown. That whole NOLA sound is a ripoff of Black Sabbath. Right. If you really want to go that way, I mean, that whole NOLA sludgy down crowbar I hate God thing is a derivative, a faster derivative of Black Sabbath.
Oh, yeah. You know,
they all steal from everybody. It's fine.
Everybody's stealing from everybody.
As far as I'm concerned, the only thing I hate that they steal is members from each other, because then you get less bands.
Well, I mean, I feel like you almost have more bands, because every single member of every single New Orleans band has 13 other bands.
Well, that is true.
they're just so incestual down there. They're like, yeah, everybody's in everybody's band, and then they all get together for down shows.
Yeah, well, that's true too. but I'll tell you what, of all those bands, I like them all. I don't know if you do or not, but give me Exhorter, give me I Hate God, give me Down, give me Crowbar. Mm-hmm. I am okay with all of it.
Oh yeah, it's all great.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with one of Dimebag's other heroes. I'm sure you want to, go on vacation soon. So I'm going to let you know that original Kiss guitarist Ace Frehley's early 1980s house in Connecticut is available as an Airbnb rental.
Oh, good. Can't wait to go there. Is it painted like with whatever his art was? What was his art?
I don't know his art.
What was it? What was he? He was the Starman? No, that's
Paul. Oh, he was the Spaceman.
The Spaceman.
Space Ace.
Yeah. Ugh. You see my Kiss-dom coming out. I don't even know what their paint means.
Let's see here. Ace Frehley reportedly bought the house in 1978, moved into it in 1979, left it in 1983, and eventually sold it in October of 1986.
Wait a minute. Whoa.
Yeah.
So a house that he has not had any involvement in 40 years.
Yep.
Is what we're saying. Hey, you can go stay there because he once stayed there.
I just clicked on the Airbnb link. It's a live like a rock star.
Please. Like Welcome a rock star did 40 years ago.
Welcome to the former residence of Ace Frehley of the iconic band Kiss.
Oh, brother.
Cross through the iron gates, over a stone bridge, and up a circular driveway with a garden pond and waterfall, and arrive at this 6,400 square foot four bedroom home situated on a 70 acre private farm with accessible hiking trails. And it makes for this makes for a perfect escape.
This sounds awful. What does this have to do with Ace Frehley other than he once owned it?
It says Aiken, but I guess it's akin to something out of a magazine. This breathtaking home offers it wide open spaces, lots of glass and light. Come record in the restored studio if you'd like. Oh, you can go rent it as a podcast. We can record podcasts there.
Yeah, you can use a board that's 50 years old. Great. Come record on our reel to reels.
Bring your own 2-inch tape.
Every booking comes with a razor blade so that you can splice audio tape as well. It's going to be fantastic.
You were kind of talking about artwork, which is kind of funny. There's terrible artwork all through this house. Like you get the rock star stuff at Hobby Lobby, you know, and says like, I want to party like a rock star type stuff. Oh, there's a picture of Ace at the house with his dogs at the bottom. Look at that.
Well, you know, in Ace's defense, or in this Airbnb's defense, all of Ace's artwork is terrible as well on his albums. So maybe it's the actual original artwork for all of his solo records.
Oh man, $740 a night.
Get the fuck out of here. To stay in Connecticut at a house that Ace owned 40 years ago? No. No.
Let's see some of the reviews here. This house is such a fun home. It definitely lives up to the rock and roll billing.
Signed Ace F.
Signed the people that own this Airbnb. Right. They're trying to get you to do some more stuff with. But yeah, if you want to, you know, take a little trip up to Connecticut, you know, hang out at a house that Ace hasn't lived in 40 years, then you know, there you go.
What a disgusting, cheap way to try and get pop on. I'm surprised they haven't called it Space Ace Airbnb.
Who does it have a name? I don't know if you can. I guess it's just a live like a rock star.
The Freely Home. Yeah. Come and stay at Freely's Rocket. Ugh. Terrible.
Nice. So yeah, if you want to get away, I mean, I know Cleveland gets a little rough around the edges sometimes. Go ahead on Connecticut and spend some time.
Yeah, I'll be doing that never.
One more ridiculous story, and then we'll dive into another ridiculous story.
All right.
Godsmack's Sully Erno once dated Lady Gaga, but it was a brief thing.
So he fucked her.
I guess so. Yeah, it just kind of sounds like it.
It was brief, 20 minutes.
12 minutes and some snuggling. During an appearance on the 2020 podcast, Godsmack drummer Shannon Larkin was asked if it's true that the band's frontman Sully Erna once dated pop star Lady Gaga. And he responded, as transcribed by Blabbermouth.net, "Yeah, that's true. And that's not, I don't think, a secret. I don't think Sully would bum out if people knew he dated Lady Gaga. I mean, she's hot and she's mega talented."
Yeah, I'm sure that's the part he was looking for. The mega talented part. He was looking for two things: ass and some opportunity to record and get something out there for the masses. That's it.
As for why Erna hasn't publicly disclosed that he was once romantically involved with Lady Gaga, Larkin said,
"It's because she doesn't want her to deny it."
"He's not Tommy Lee or whatever, or whoever the guy is now. What I mean by that is Travis Barker, Tommy Lee, whatever, is dudes that have public girlfriends that are super famous too. But that's different than Sully. Sully's an East Coast guy. He's like me. Tony and Robbie, we're East Coast dudes. LA bands and West Coast dudes, they're flashier maybe, and their rock star-ism is more like David Lee Roth than, I don't know, Eddie Vedder."
Do we know if Sully's married now?
I don't know.
Because I just wonder if he's married or has like a longtime girlfriend or any of that, if that might be part of this deal too.
Yeah, and the only other thing is, back in July of 2019, Erna said that the Godsmack ballad "Under Your Scars" was inspired by Lady Gaga.
Mm. Oh, well.
So,
and if scars means dress, then I get it.
Maybe it's under your scarves.
Yeah, under your skirt.
Too funny. We'll dive into one more ridiculous story, and then we will get into some recommendations, all that good stuff.
All right.
Tennessee female cop and male officers are fired over multiple cases of sex, nudes, and girls gone wild parties and more.
Where? Tennessee? No.
Yeah. All right, so here's the article from Outkick.com. Okay. Let's go to Laverne, Tennessee, where the local police station turned into Police Academy X-rated, with cops were banging and engaging in all sorts of sexcapades thanks to one horny female officer, investigators allege.
Wow.
Officer Megan Hall is at the center of this wild story because she's accused of six sexual relationships with five different officers on the police force for a city of just under 40,000 residents. Needless to say, that's a large percentage of the city's officers who are getting it on with Hall.
Nice.
The allegations also include Hall and fellow officers sending dirty pictures, Hall ripping off her top at a Girls Gone Wild inspired hot tub party, and giving two officers oral sex at the police station.
This sounds like a wonderful place to work.
All of the allegations that were spread over 20 pages. Well, so this is bullet points. Hall reportedly told fellow officer Patrick MAGALOCO about Officer Lewis Powell's big black dick. And MAGALOCO told investigators that he knew Hall had oral sex with Powell at the police substation. Officer MAGALOCO added that he and his wife decided to have an open relationship that developed into sex with Hall on numerous occasions.
Wow. This place sounds wonderful.
The next bullet point, there were houseboat parties. There were hot tub parties. MAGALOCO says boobs were out. There was drinking. There were guns being dry fired. What's dry fired? Is that blanks?
Probably just unloaded, but still. You know, clicking, right? Clicking them.
MAGALOCO also says that Hall sent nudes to all sorts of officers. And once officer said he received an invitation for a booty call from the horny cop.
Okay.
There were moments where MAGALOCO was asked by Hall if he wanted to fuck, but the officer settled on oral sex on top of the hill.
Settled. Yeah. That means she's not good at it or what?
I have no idea. I think Magaloco's married. I think so. Maybe he was just trying to.
Yeah, he's trying to downplay it. Honest, honey, she just sucked my dick. What's the big deal?
There were secret meetings between Officer Hall and Officer Powell at a Planet Fitness to discuss the internal affairs investigation that the internal affairs investigators knew about. Hall reportedly sent one officer a text requesting that he fuck her and drag her around by the hair.
Jeez, this sounds great. This sounds like it's fresh out of fucking Pornhub.
It's funny you said that, because the next paragraph is, let's just say the internal investigation is pretty much a penthouse forum report.
I mean, dude, in the end, what's the problem with this? Did they do their job?
Yeah, I guess if they were on duty, that's the problem.
Yeah, I get that. But look, have you not worked at a place where somebody was fucking during the workday? Honestly,
maybe not during the workday, but I mean, I've worked in enough restaurants and, you know, pretty much everybody at a restaurant is hooking up with each other.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at, I better not say where, because I still have people that work there and some of them were fucking, but I worked at a place that was a business place. It was a business. It was not the kind of place that you would expect a lot of hookups to be going. I was a professional place, I guess. And there was all kinds of hookups. There was hookups at lunch, hookups in the car, hookups in the IT room, you know, just lock the door for 20 minutes. You know, that shit was going on all the time. This shit goes on all the time. The only reason this is an issue is because this girl was throwing the pictures around.
Yeah.
If she could have kept it on the down low instead of throwing out texts saying, hey, you want some pussy today? You know, if she could have refrained from that and maybe just asked in quiet, this shit would never be an issue, because that's look. How many people do you know that are married to somebody they met at work?
Well, I'm married to someone I met at work. So yeah,
there you go. So there you go. And I guarantee you weren't fucking beforehand.
Not at work.
Okay. There you go. That's what I mean. But I mean, neither one of you quit before you banged her the first time, right?
Yeah.
That's right. The point.
No. Like I was gone. I was long gone after.
Oh, were you? Okay.
Yeah. No, we met through our former employer, but yeah, we just kind of kept in touch.
Nice.
Sorry. I was reading. There's a new story. There's a second part to this story.
Oh, okay.
So the husband of the Girls Gone Wild Tennessee cop fired for having sex with multiple coworkers didn't seem to support the open marriage. So this Megan Hall, I mean, she's a solid
whore.
Are you looking at her?
No. What's her name? Megan Hall?
Yeah. M-A-E-G-A-N. Megan Hall.
Megan Hall.
She's a solid 4 or 5.
Let's see her.
Her face is just something.
Let's see. All right. Let's see. Boy, she's got a lot of forehead there.
Right.
Holy cow, you can watch a movie on that. Yeah. Yeah. She's.
It's definitely not a sexy cop. She's just throwing it around and people are taking it.
Well, because that's what guys do. Yeah. I mean, yeah, she's definitely not. She's not the office queen that everybody wants to get a piece of. She's just the one that everybody can get a piece of.
So the story says the husband of the Girls Gone Wild Tennessee cop who was fired for having sex with multiple officers at the Laverne police station had serious reservations about his wife's swinging ways, according to an internal affair report. Megan Hall, who was fired from the Laverne PD for all sorts of sexual behavior, married park ranger cop. So she got a thing for cops. Yeah. So she became a cop.
She likes the badge.
Yeah, park ranger cop Jedediah Hall in 2018, and things seemed to be going well until 2022 when Megan turned into a sex fiend, allegedly, and started banging Officer Patrick Malaloco on the side. Poor Jedediah, he was about to find out just how wild his wife was while around his fellow cops. Let's just say, according to an investigation, that she was really into sharing special time with fellow cops.
Yeah. I'm looking at this article. Are you looking at the, I'm not sure which one you're reading. Are you looking at the Daily Mail article?
No, I'm on Outkick.
All right. This is, I'm looking at the Daily Mail. If people want to look up Megan Hall and then click the Daily Mail, it shows pictures of all these guys.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Other than the one guy that looks sort of like Dana White. These are all guys you would expect to be hooking up with her.
Yeah.
Yeah. But she's, yeah, she's a four is you being two times generous. She's not a four. She's not a shopping cart four or shopping, a grocery store four.
All right. I'm a nice guy, Chris.
I guess so. Well, she does have some tats though.
Yeah, maybe that's my.
Maybe that's it. The tats are it for you.
According to an internal affairs document, Magaloco told investigators that at one party, Megan and Magaloco's wife started kissing, and Hall's husband came in the room and seemed upset. On the next day on shift, Magaloco asked Hall about the husband's reaction, since Magaloco was under the impression from Hall that her marriage was open as well. Hall reportedly told Magaloco he really wasn't on board.
Guess not. I guess they don't both have to be on board for her to throw it around, right?
Right.
Just she does.
Magaloco then told investigators he had sexual intercourse with Hall on numerous occasions.
It's funny because, dude, this photo I'm looking at, he's holding up a plaque that says Biggest Loser. The MAGA logo guy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you certainly are that. He's proud that he was banging that. I mean, from what you just read, he said, I hooked up with her many times.
Yeah, the way it looks like, it's like, oh, your husband's not on board with this? That sucks, but I still banged her like multiple times after that.
I pounded a hole in the bottom of that, pal.
Oh yeah, your wife was telling me to fuck me and drag her around by the hair.
Right. There you go. Okay.
So there was sex on a hilltop, sex at the police station, there was sex with Officer Juan Lugo Perez after meeting him at a go-kart track. Houseboat sex. There was some off-duty sex. So, yeah, she likes the cops.
She is a goer.
Now she's just going to try to get put in jail. see what she can do with the guards next.
That's right. She apparently liked the nightstick. Apparently.
So that's what's going on down in Laverne, Tennessee.
I'm moving.
Gonna become a police officer. Aiken reporting that's for right. duty.
Here I am. I can eat donuts with the best of them. I'm here.
I don't remember where Laverne is. I think I'm sure I've been there.
It's probably like a two street town or something. Because they said at the beginning she banged six cops, and that was like most of the police force. So it can't be right. Like 30,000 people in the town.
Yeah, it's definitely a suburb of Nashville. Let's see here. Oh yeah. Oh, actually, that's down by. It's down by. Old Sinzak. I think Sinzak or Aaron Camaro lived in Laverne for a while. So there you go.
They lived in Laverne.
Yeah, it's a suburb of Nashville. So
you mean Aaron Camaro, aka Officer Maglioko?
I mean, that might be Camaro's real last name. It's Aaron Maglioko.
Yeah, it could be.
Good for him. Good for Aaron.
Yeah.
Officer Camaro.
That's right. Sure they'll appreciate hearing that.
Yeah, right. Aaron's wife is elbowing him right now.
It's not funny.
Because you know they listen to the show together.
Of course. Of course they do.
All right, man. Have you been listening to anything, watching anything, checking anything out?
Watching, nothing really spectacular watching. Let me take that back. I've gotten back on my murder porn kick again.
Okay.
And I have come to discover that the best murder porn is now on Tubi TV. You got to suffer through a commercial every now and again, but they do the best coverage of the murder porn. And I'm going to be honest on this one. I'm going to tell you about it. I'm not positive that the name of it is The Worst Crime, but that's okay. One of the ones that was good. And I don't know that that was this one, but if it's not, it's one that you'll find if you look this one up. So this took place in England, or it's taking place in England, because this is some wild shit. So there was these two kids. They were 10 years old. Okay. They lured some other kid over to some water to try and drown him.
Okay.
And the mother of the kid caught him and told him to get away from the water. It was like a little lake or something. So then they walked away. The mother goes away. They go somewhere else. They beat the kid with bricks.
Jesus
Christ. Almost to death. Oh, it gets better. Almost to death. But then since he's knocked out, they lay him on train tracks and he gets cut in half by a train.
Wow.
I mean, crazy shit, right?
Yeah.
So they get charged for murder as 10-year-olds. And they have all the like recordings of the cops interviewing these 10-year-olds and the kids going, "I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do," you know, like
all this, right.
All this crazy footage, right? So they get sentenced in England. This is in England. And in England, they have some other kind of, like here, you know, you would get put into like a detention center or something till you turn 18 and then you'd be evaluated and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Over there, they have something. I think it's called like a re-education camp or something. I forget what it was called.
Okay.
But the judge makes an order that they're going to give out the names of these two kids, which they do to the public. But then after that, nobody is allowed to report on these kids anymore. You're not allowed to give out where they live, like if they're where they're doing their camp time. Once they get free, you're not allowed to post pictures of them. All this crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, now it's been like 10 years and they may or may not be out. And the parents are on a crusade, an active, upfront vocal crusade that we're going to hunt these fucking kids down and kill them. And they've got radio guys that are going on the air every day trying to organize people to find these kids and kill them. It's totally nuts.
Wow.
And like, so during the course of this documentary, the lady that's doing the documentary is forwarded what might be a picture of one of the kids, like seen in public now he's like 20 or whatever. So she takes it to another guy that was in the camp with him, and the guy's like, "Yeah, that could very well be, that could be him, you know, got the same look, got the same eyes and the same ears or whatever." And so now it's like this crusade of are they gonna be able to protect these two now adults, or are they going to get killed by the mob that's looking to kill him since the law didn't kill him?
Wow.
How insane is that?
I mean, just think about the, if the last time they saw him, they were 10. And so that's all they have to go on.
Yeah.
And you know, you look at young photos of people, you're like, oh, I could kind of see that was you as a kid. Like, you know, like in movies, when they show you as a kid, they would show you with like long hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As a kid, you know what I'm saying? Like, but when you were a kid, obviously you'd probably have a buzz cut or something.
Hair, yeah.
You know, but in movies, they would show like just the younger version as a, you know, just a version of yourself and not
right.
like really what we all look like as dorks as kids.
Right.
But now you're out there searching for someone that may or may not be these kids and stuff, man. That's gotta be tough to just be like walking around with a photo, just like you could be. Yeah. So I'll kill you first.
But they got thousands of people looking for him too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, it's fun. I was thinking about this and I'm like torn on this one. I mean, if they had done that to my kid, yeah, I'd be the first one looking to gun somebody down. That being said, I don't think I'd be in public telling people that.
Right.
You know, I don't think I'd be out there pointing the finger at me as the one that killed him eventually. I'd just be kind of quiet about it. But so I understood it. And at the same time, I sort of understood the, well, they kind of did their time. You know, should they, you know, they did 10 years of time, which... You know, I mean, dude, you remember, or maybe you don't, when you were 10 years old, killing somebody and breaking your fucking pencil at school were about the same. You know, you didn't think one was bigger than the other or something. It was crazy. So that's kind of what I've been watching is these murder documentaries on Tubi. Tubi has the best documentaries. They just do.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I don't know why Tubi has them and Netflix doesn't or whatever. But
right.
But this was some sort of Tubi original, and I think it was called Worst Crime, because that clearly is about the worst crime, throwing a kid on a train track and getting him cut in half. Ugh.
Yeah, that reminds me of the – I can't remember if it's – I'm looking at it now. The Gary – oh, man, this is a crazy last name – Plache. The guy that was basically like, they were leading his son's rapist like through a hallway when there were some payphones. So Gary goes over to the payphones, act like he's on the phone, and as he's walking by it behind him, he turns around and it's on live TV. He turns around and kills his son's rapist on live television. But
wow, yeah. I mean, yeah, dude, it's insane. I mean, it's. I mean, there's nutty people out there. There's no question about that. Okay, I was wrong on the title. I just looked it up.
Okay.
The title is Unforgiven, The Boys Who Killed Jamie Bulger.
Wow.
That is the title, but it is... I've just been submerged in these documentaries like this. I watched that one. There's another one called... Tubi has a series called Suburban Nightmare. My all-time least favorite guy, Chris Watts, is one of those guys, the one that dumped his kids in the oil tank.
Oh, yeah.
But now they got another one on JonBenet Ramsey, and this one clearly puts the finger on the mother. It's like with new evidence and stuff with that case. So I just get sucked into this shit. I don't know how, but I do.
Yeah, I mean, there for a long time, I would listen to my sports podcast, I would listen to my music podcast, and then I was listening to the murder podcast.
Sure.
At the beginning of the pandemic, everything was just so down all the time. Yeah. It was just like everybody was upset and sad and just like bummed out. And then, so I would continue to listen to these murder podcasts, and it would just like put you in even a worse place. I had to finally stop. But like my wife still listens to them every day. And like, so sometimes she'll have one on in the car or something. So I'll listen to them then.
Right.
And I still get, you know, I'm definitely intrigued by them, but yeah, I was big on the murder podcast for a long time. And then finally I was just like, all right, I can't do this anymore. This is just too much. You know, people talking about, you know, killing people and then like trying to chop them up and flush them down the toilet. Yeah. And the only way they found the guy was doing it is because the toilet got clogged. And the city went in to check the pipes and it's full of meat, you know, shit like that. Just like, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, dude, people do some wacky shit, man. That is for sure. I mean, just watching these things, it's like, you know, I don't even know why I watch them, because it just makes me more and more like hating of people. Yeah. You know, but man, there's, if you're into it, Tubi is the place to find it, because it is all there on Tubi, and it's really, really intense.
Now, is Tubi one of those the free sites you said you have to deal with a commercial every once in a while? Mm-hmm. Do they at least, I know like Crackle and things like that, I've tried to watch stuff on Crackle, and the commercials just come whenever. Like they have no rhyme or reason, like when the commercial breaks are happening. Does Tubi do that also?
Tubi is better. Tubi's owned by Fox, I think. I'm pretty sure Fox is the one that owns Tubi. And they've got professionals that are working it. Crackle used to be owned by Sony, but then they sold to just some random company. And I agree with you. Crackle is bizarre. You'll be watching something on Crackle and they'll be like, so then I went, what about these, you know, whatever, you're right into a commercial right in the middle of something important. And it's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Crackle kind of went downhill when they got sold, but Tubi or Pluto are probably 1A and 1B as far as the best run of all of them.
If you don't worry about live TV, if you just want like Pluto TV is amazing.
It's great.
You know, for all of the old series, and I some days I'll just throw on like The Price is Right and watch The Price is Right from like 1982, you know, like back to back and shit like
that. And you'll guess on the products, and you'll be way overpriced. There'll be like a gallon of milk, you'll be like $4.39, and it's like 89 cents. Like, wait a minute.
Well, either that or like they'll show like old furniture that you're like, all right, I can get that at a yard sale right now for $1.50.
Right.
It'd be like, this bedroom suit is $9,000.
Right. Or they'll say, here it is. It's a brand new car. Comes with AM radio.
Yeah. You know? Power steering.
Yeah.
Anti-lock brakes. Windows. Oh, you still get, I was actually on like TikTok or something the other day, and there was a old Price is Right on there, and he won a car, and this car you could buy right now for $850.
Right.
But he was just like, yeah, like just pumping and jumping around. And, you know, I'm like, dude, that car's some of those those early 80s, like foreign cars, man, they're rough.
Dude, do you remember? And this was I've looked for it on YouTube and I can't find it, but I remember watching it when I was younger. I wasn't a little kid, but I was younger. I just remember being home from school or something, and I was watching The Price is Right, and a lady like jumped up to spin the fucking wheel, and she got sucked under the wheel. Like she fell under the wheel. And I want to find it because it would make an awesome TikTok video.
Yeah.
You know, it would be awesome for TikTok. It would probably do 10 zillion fucking hits. But it was a lady. She jumped up to spin the wheel, and she got sucked right under with the wheel. It was great.
Now, was that what happened really, or what you wanted to happen?
No, she got sucked down. Like she didn't let go of the wheel, so she got kind of jammed down. Like she's holding it, and she's woof, and kind of like fell forward with the wheel under the wheel.
Let's see what this is here.
Did you find it? If you found it, I'm going to be pissed.
Let's see. I haven't shared screen in so long.
Let's see.
There was another
episode. No, this is too new.
This is too new.
This time on The Price is Right.
But I still want to see it fall.
James Renee didn't just come on down. She fell on down on her butt.
Oh, come on.
That's nothing.
You're right.
And she was able to carry on.
But she was able to carry on.
She was able to carry on. Why wouldn't she be able to carry on?
You're gonna break one of your fancy nails. Thanks, Rob.
Dude, where'd you go?
I just removed myself, not the...
You took yourself out of the picture. I think you fell down.
I'm under the podcast right now.
That's right. But yeah, anyway, that's all I've been watching. As far as listening, I did an interview today for
a 12-minute interview of contestants getting injured on the Price.
Oh, nice. Right. I like that. I might have to watch that. But now I did this interview today of a band out of Finland.
Okay.
The band is called Anzillo, I guess. Phil-Anzillo. And the reason I say I guess, this, you know how, and I know you do this too, dude, when you don't know how to say their names and you don't know the name of the band or whatever, you ask before get started so that you don't come off looking like a dick. I asked the guy, I said, how do you say the name of this band? Is it Anzillo or Anzillo or what? You know, like with the different inflection. And he goes, I don't know. He's from Finland. He's like, I don't know. It is Italian or whatever that word is. You know, he's like, and right. I was like, dude, that's the name of your band. He's like, I don't know if it's Anzillo or Anzillo. I say Anzillo. So, okay. So that's at the start. So then we go from that to the name of the record is EX-NIHILO.
Okay.
So I said, is it X Nilo, like rivers of Nile, or what? He goes, okay.
Right.
I was like, all right. So then he had one of those Finnish names with all the umlauts in it, like three different letters with umlauts in it. And I said, how do you pronounce that? And he goes, he says it, but he says it with like, this is going to sound super, super, I don't know, racist or whatever, but he says it like in Finnish.
Okay.
To where I'm not going to get it.
Right.
And then it was like, damn. So I even said to him at the end, I was like, dude, you guys are like difficult to interview. And he's like, no, it's very easy. Just call it whatever you want.
Right. Like,
okay, good enough. So I think I literally went into it and just said, hey, and on the phone from Anzillo, it's Jesse.
Yeah, there's definitely been many an interview where I'll be like, hey, this is Mark from blah, 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 like leaving the last name off. But yeah, I do the whole, I'm like, all right, the name of the band is blah, 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 and your name is blah, 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 and like, you know, make sure it's right or whatnot.
Yeah. Well, you just want to show, I mean, I think that's just showing them the proper respect.
Well, yeah, it is. I think so.
You know, and last thing the guy wants me to do is say, here's a band in Zulio with their record Nihilo, you know, and here's Johnny. You know, I'm right. Sure that's not what he wants me to do, because that's even more insulting. So, you know, I tried, but this guy just was like, I don't know how to say the name of my band.
Yeah, the drummer from Killswitch, his side project is like Libica or whatever.
Okay.
But it looks like Libica or, you know.
Right.
And it's like one of those deals where you're like, well, how do you say it? And he's like, well, I really don't know how you're supposed to pronounce it, but we call it Libica or something.
Well, it's just like,
well, then why don't you? Yeah. Like, let's just get on the same page right now and we'll go from here.
But you're in the band. The band calls it this. That's the name of the band.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of interviews, I actually meant to say this earlier, but check out my interview with John Tardy, the legendary vocalist of the band Obituary.
I have to hear this because they ruled.
Oh, yeah.
Like, one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. It was good. It was actually funny. Like, I haven't done an interview in a few months, like I think since that Mike Mushok interview. So it's like, I had to like knock off the cobwebs, you know,
right.
Doing an interview again, but it was cool. Talked about 25 minutes and he's a big Miami Dolphins fan, sure. Which is funny because when you look at videos of them, like they actually do a lot on social media where they'll do them signing the albums and things like that. But okay. He's always decked out in like this Dolphins gear. And I'm like, the dude from Obituary wearing Miami Dolphins gear. Like, the Dolphins are the most unmetal
right.
colors and logo out there. I mean, it's a right. dolphin, for God's sakes.
Right. Here's one of the heaviest bands ever decked out in teal. You know, right. It's like, what is happening here?
I said that to him. I was like, the Dolphins like the most unmetal whatever gear out there. And he goes, it looks great on my boat. Nice. I'm like, I'm sure it does look great on your boat. But yeah, we actually, yeah, yeah. I am interviewing the dude from Obituary and we have a good 2 or 3 minute talk about Ryan Tannehill. So
oh, nice.
That's definitely a Talk To Me podcast for you right there.
Hell yeah.
But you know, it was good stuff, man. And the new album's great. Like, you can't go wrong with Obituary.
Yeah. Obituary is, you just, if you go into thinking you're going to get anything other than bludgeoned, then you're wrong. And this new record is exactly that. Is you just turn it on, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. There was a question there. I'm wondering, I haven't heard anything, but I was wondering if people got what I was trying to ask, because it did kind of come out weird. But because his voice is very like kind of a sound. It's not necessarily singing or screaming. Mm-hmm. It's almost a sound. So I did ask him, I was like, are there certain words, phrases, or sounds that you can't really do with that voice?
Right.
And, you know, he jokingly, butterfly and love, you know. I don't know if he got where I was trying to go with that one, but.
That's funny.
It was a fun interview, though. It was funny. It was one of those. I don't know if I talked to you about this or not, but I was supposed to get Donald Tardy, which is the drummer who does a lot of the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
And like the morning of the interview, I get a text from the publicist.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey, do you mind interviewing John Tardy? And I'm like, I wrote him back. I was like, in the history of interviews, nobody has ever turned down the singer for the drummer.
Yeah, never.
But yeah, so I've had Trevor on and I've had Donald on. So now I've had John Tardy on. I'm collecting all of Obituary on the podcast.
You're obitched out, man.
Yeah, they've always one of my favorite bands.
Same here. I love them.
Now my recommendation, now that we've done all that, I sent this to you, man, a band called Hard Reset out of Nashville.
Yes. I listened to it yesterday in the car. God damn. Jesus.
I put it on their Spotify and just because, I mean, they're a newer band. They're putting out a bunch of singles. So you just play like all of their stuff, man. And it's like, it's the most brutal stuff. The song that I got sent was a song called Nashville Heavy.
Right.
And obviously being growing up in Nashville, and it's just like, you know, it's Music City motherfuckers type shit. You know, I'm like, yeah, here we go. And yeah, I'm definitely going to reach out to them, have them on the show, because they just, you know, a band that heavy coming out of Nashville just warms the heart, you know, like, you know, cause I just grew up in that scene always hearing like, oh, it's all country music down there. It's all this, it's all that. And then you hear those guys come out and the area code for Nashville is 615. So the whole 66615.
Right.
I texted a buddy of mine. I was like, why did we never think of 66615?
I know this. They have breakdowns that would sink a cruise ship.
Yes.
Jesus, those breakdowns are like boom, bada, 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 boom. I was like, God, look at my whole car was shaking. I was like, this rules.
And the lyrics, man, they really went to just like, I'm like, God, damn, that's like Chris Aiken coming out of the speakers, man. So it's like, there's like ones like, put the gun in your mouth and pull the fucking trigger. And he's like, and if you don't do it, I'll pull it for you. And I'm like, God damn. And there's like one. It's just like, from what I'm gathering, it's like maybe about like social media influencers and stuff like that. And it's just like, when the electricity goes out, you know, or will you kill yourself and shit? I'm butchering all of this, and I do apologize, Hard Reset, but I do sound like the old guy that's like, yeah, there's like fucking death and death and more death.
But no, you got to get them on. That's one that when you're doing that one, you need to rope me in on that, because really liked hearing that. I'd like to talk to them.
Yeah. We'll have them on one of these days. But
one of these shows.
One of these shows. But yeah, man, I was listening to them today at the gym too, you know, like getting a workout in. But
get my pump on.
Working on the guns, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I was just like, those breakdowns, man. I almost ran the car off the road a few times just because.
I'll tell you how heavy that shit is. I listened to it yesterday. You sent it to me in the middle of the day, like when I was driving out to my podcast studio. And I listened to it in the car. And then when I got back in my car, the Bluetooth picked up and it played it again, you know, just like, boom, because it's the last thing I played. So I'm listening to it. Then today, all I could listen to is like breakdown music. So steady stream of Hatebreed all day today. And bands like that, just because you got me in that mindset, man. Great band. I really like that band.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely cool. Cool vocals, cool guitars. Yeah. And yeah, I was definitely into it. And then Prong put out a new song called Breaking Point. I think if you're a Prong fan, you will enjoy that song. Yep. So
sounds like Prong.
sounds like prong. So go check that out. And I think that will do it for another episode here of Talk To Me on NotFest.com.
That's right.
Looks like we're Brian Posehn's here this week, so I'll probably go check him out.
Sweet.
That's one dude, man. I've hit him at every different angle to get him on the show and still no like response.
Dude, just grab him at the comedy store and go, okay, we're live with Brian Posehn. Hey, right. You're live.
Yeah.
And then see if he'll just do it because he's, you know, pressured by the camera.
There you go. Yeah, nothing better than bum rushing an interview.
Yeah, why not? It works well all the time.
Nice. I mean, I guess if you're listening this far into the show or watching this far into the show, definitely some changes on the horizon. This show will get its own name and all kinds of good stuff, and then I'll keep the Talk To Me name for my interview show. But Chris Aiken and myself will have its own show.
Whoa,
we'll give it its own name. Because
another show title for me.
So it's fun, man. Coming up with a name is the dumbest thing in the world.
You liked some of the ones I sent today, didn't you? Sort of.
Yeah, maybe? I thought those were more taglines. I think we'll end up being just To Me and Aiken, or Aiken and To Me, or however you want to do it, and then with a tagline.
Yeah, but we'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. If you guys have any suggestions, you're hearing this late into the show, you know, hit us up. But it's tough, man. It's tough naming stuff.
Yeah. Just because no matter what you pick, it doesn't feel right until you actually see it a couple of times. That's the hardest part of it. Right now, is, you know, you throw it out there, it's like, oh, that fucking sounds stupid.
Right.
And then once you see five episodes up there, you'd be like, all right, that kind of works.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was actually joking about the Bonnaroo lineup, you know, because I mean, really, once you get past the first two or three big names on there, I'm just like, I have no clue. These are all made up names. Right. This is like a band name generator, just shit out a flyer. but I was like, all these names sound made up except for Korn. All right. Well, that will do it here for another episode of Talk To Me here on NotFest.com. As always, I am Joshua Toomey.
I am Chris Aiken.
And we will talk to you soon.
See ya.
The Talk To Me podcast presented by NotFest.com. Follow the show at Talk To Me Talk. Be sure to subscribe, rate the podcast, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app to get the latest from the Talk To Me podcast.